He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys.
As we start this show, heading for the holidays, we have a first snowstorm or snowfall of any visible significance occurring around our broadcast corner. Depending on when you hear this show, it'll either be the day you hear the show or later on. But that brought to me a topic of about how you drive in transitioning weather conditions, because I started out this morning to get to the broadcast location or the taping location, and I start out in rain with a temperature reading of 36 degrees on my car's thermometer. And I was listening to weather forecasts, and the weather forecast from down in southeastern Connecticut, where I started out from, was saying that it was going to be portions of snow and rain off and on all day, and then it started. They started migrating the forecast, saying inland it was going to be all snow and be rain. So I came northward for my somewhat normal morning drive, and the rain transitioned into sleet and then into snow. And I started watching my thermometer go from 36 to 33, where it held quite a long time, and stayed that way almost into the northwest corner of the state of Connecticut, where we are. And now it is snowing, and I was watching for salt trucks to start distributing snow salt on the roads, which came in the form of New York State, because I was in New York State for a long way, and they were going south, and blessedly I was going north, because as we know, snow trucks don't drive, the big state trucks don't go very fast, either because they can't or because they're loaded with salt and they're distributing. And so there are lines of cars behind them, which was the case in three particular separate instances. None were actually throwing salt onto the roads, as far as I could see. You can generally see it if you're watching carefully, because you see little snow salt pellets bouncing on the road as it's coming out of the rear of the impellers that are taking it off out of the backs of the trucks and distributing on the highways. So I was happy about that. But I was also waiting to see whether the wet roads, because it has been raining prior to the turnover, were freezing up at all, or seemingly freezing up, or snow was starting to overcome the rain and show white effects on the surface, which tends to happen in snow periods. Anyways, jump to the situation. Between my start and my finish of the drive, I saw no signs of any applied snow salt on the New York State roads. And whether or not Connecticut dribbled their liquid stuff on, you couldn't see, because the roads were wet, so you couldn't see the straight white lines that you see if you know anything about what Connecticut's been doing sometimes when they put liquid stuff on the road in advance of a storm designed to melt the snow as it hits the surface in a chemical reaction. But to that end, driving in transitioning conditions can be a somewhat dangerous condition if you don't know what you're doing, and very safe and fine if you do know what you're doing. And what you really need to do, this is sort of safety in the beginning of the show instead of at the end, is when you're driving in transitioning conditions, you don't know whether the roads are actually freezing yet because that temperature hasn't gotten cold enough or whatever, you should be very aware of the speed you're going as you approach corners and as you go down hills and as you approach traffic coming opposite you. And, Jay, you can jump in at some point. Because you don't know what kind of traction levels there are existing on the road surfaces during these transition periods until something happens to make you become aware of it.
No, I agree. Those are the most "quote unquote" dangerous conditions because people get surprised, right? And we
people
all
get
do.
Surprised,
and,
right?
You know, if there's a big snowstorm and you go out and there's a foot of snow out, well, you know what you're facing. the danger, like you just mentioned, is that, you know, if the road is just wet, you don't know when it's going to go from wet to freezing. If you're on the highway, you just have to be very careful. I've said it before on the show, if I'm on small roads, I'll stop on the side of the road and get out and walk and see if things are freezing or not, if I have any doubts. But, yeah, this is a time of year when we need to be careful. It's a time of year to check your tires and make sure that if you're going on all seasons all year round, that your all seasons are, you know, on the better side of things. And the ideal is still to put snow tires on the cars, even if you're driving an all-wheel drive vehicle.
People are using studded tires as well. You hear those tires when you're in a parking lot and traffic's going by on a highway, or if you have a window down for some reason, because they make a clattering sound on the pavement. And I'm not sure what I think, but I want Jay's opinion after I finish, but I'm not sure.
I just said
what I'm not a big fan of studded snow tires.
Yeah. They're antiquated. Snow tires or ice whatever, winter tires now are designed with silicone slats
compound
in them, integrated in the rubber to do what spikes used to do in the old days. I think studded tires in this day and age are totally antiquated. Maybe in area, you know, if you're in Alaska somewhere where you're driving on nothing but ice all the time, maybe, and I'm not even sure. Other than that, they make no sense whatsoever.
Well, they do make noise, and they do cost more, and I think people, I think they give some kind of psychological comfort to people, not necessarily warranted, as you're surmising or suggesting. But the compounds of the winter non-studded tires, and they may be produced to take studs if people want them installed, are such that they will give relatively, in cases, quite good grip on snow and icy road conditions because of the compounds that the manufacturers put in. I know, Jay, you run tires with those compounds in them, I think, on your VW. Or maybe you don't. I'm not sure this year. I have snow tire or treaded for snow tires in my garage, they're on rims, and at some point I'm going to go to a garage and have them swap what they call the all-weather traction tires, which may be all right for general snow conditions but not severe, put them on one of my Jeeps, which I will do if I think we're going to have a real snowy condition or I'm going to be driving up in heavier snowed states like Vermont, Maine, or such. But basic, unless you have the money to put on or have separate snow tires, you're going to be driving on the tires that came on your car or that you have been using for the last 30,000 miles. And as Jay said earlier in this particular section of the show, you need to get out and know that you have some tread life on your tires. And we have talked about this in the safety section of this show before. But now is the time to do it before you have an action, because if you don't have good treads on your tires, good treaded tires on your vehicle, you are prone to not having stopping power or corner-turning power or aquaplaning resistance situations with your tires if they have a very low tread life left on them, meaning that they're almost down to where there is not significant tread to give you the grip that treads are designed to give.
Speaking of SUVs and all-wheel drive and all-terrain vehicles, I mentioned this in during the week. A few weeks ago, I came across in my Facebook feed, I think, something popped up that caught my attention. I had not heard about them, and I feel a little terrible about it, ignorant, but INEOS is a new automotive company. INEOS Automotive, started by the guy who is the CEO and still majority owner of a British company called INEOS. For those of you who may know, they are a huge chemical conglomerate. Anyway, they started, like everybody else, they thought they could do a better vehicle, and they decided to make a body-on-frame SUV that is the probably the successor to the Land Rover Defender. It looks like Land Rover Defender. They actually tried to buy the tooling from Land Rover when Land Rover abandoned the body-on-frame, old-style Land Rover Defender and went to this new vehicle that they just came out with. And another topic is the SUV of the year with Motor Trend. Anyway, this vehicle is designed body-on-frame, looks like a Defender, is powered by a BMW engine, either a six-cylinder inline gas engine or turbo diesel. And they were looking for a factory, and until vehicles, and we see that with all our electric projects out there, the key is always to go from concept and design to production. And INEOS, what they ended up doing was just now, early December, they bought the Smartville factory from Daimler-Benz. So this is the factory in the eastern side of France where the Daimler-Benz and Smart, as a joint venture, built the Smart little cars that we have seen on the road for the last 15 years. And so they plan on starting production there of Grenadier body-on-frame SUV that looks really pretty cool. If you look it up and go online and see their website, it'll be interesting to follow. They obviously are well-funded. They plan on keeping, I think, 1,300 of the 2,000 workers that are currently working at Smartville. And it's an interesting manufacturing compound where all the major suppliers are grouped within the same compound. So it's pretty interesting. I was just doing research on that this morning.
Yes, and just to sort of finish this topic, is that it's going to be another niche vehicle because of its cost. That'll be the only reason it'll be a niche vehicle, because it's going to be a six-figure priced vehicle. I think it's starting at $125,000, and it'll probably go up. So it's going to be for the well-heeled to be able to afford it. And there will be people just like those that buy the, what is it, the Glenn,
I know what you're
Glenn
going to
Glenn
say,
the wagon and the G-Wagon. Mercedes and all that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but it is a cool-looking vehicle. I am big on these retro-look, rugged vehicles from the past. I think there's a market for them. Unfortunately, most of them are going to be more higher priced than run-of-the-mill, highly produced Broncos and other vehicles that are making a comeback from yesteryear or yestercentury, in the case of the Bronco. But it is a wonderful-looking vehicle, and it makes you look like you can, to take a local idea, climb right up the outrun of the Salisbury 60-meter jump without any trouble if somebody wanted to try that as a hill climb type of vehicle. Audi used to have an ad showing an Audi Quattro going up the in-run of a ski jump. I'm not sure exactly where they were testing tires, or was it a tire company, or was it Audi in itself, but it was quite an interesting ad that was on TV for some months from one of the years back. So that has a place in people's hearts and some people's purse strings, and we will see a few around on Northwest Corner. Jay, when's it starting to show up? Next year or 2022?
Speaking of other upscale, rather expensive, large SUVs, Chevy just, and we know the new Suburban just came out and is available. But I just saw the first test of the diesel Suburban. We all know I'm a big fan of diesels. And Chevy GM is putting an inline six-cylinder Duramax 3-liter engine in the Suburban. And although it is overall a little slower than the 5.3 V8 gas engine, it's made it to the 10-speed automatic transmission. And apparently works really, really well. And in daily driving, the power is perfectly adequate. And I think the highway mileage rating is 26 miles per gallon versus, I think, 18 or 19 for the gas version of the Suburban. So, and it's like a under $1,000 option. So it should be a pretty smart option for people who are still not afraid of going the diesel way.
But brings me into a topic I wanted to get into maybe for a couple of minutes. And, model changeovers and differentiations now between model years is becoming a little bit diluted, in my opinion, at some levels, because I don't know how many times manufacturers can redesign a vehicle line to make it look markedly different each redesign time and still be utilitarian the way the previous model generation of something is. To that end, we look at you look at the Tahoes, you look at the Suburbans and the Cadillac Escalades, and you know, they are very useful, purposeful, or purposely useful vehicles in that they remain a square body, square interior. So they are really designed to be able to carry people and people's belongings in an effective manner. Contrary to these the smaller SUVs that try to sort of be people carriers, but due to things that I've complained about for many years in this show, the rounding off of the rear section of these vehicles to a point that they lose some of their usefulness in terms of cargo capacity once you've gotten behind the passenger seats.
And, yeah, although, you know, and I've been not a fan of certain SUVs such as BMW and Mercedes, you know, kind of coupes. On the other hand, some of them, I think, come out really nicely. Hate to mention the Tesla Y once again, but I think the overall design is pretty cool, and it's still a fairly functional vehicle.
Speaking of Tesla, which I'm glad you brought the name up, Tesla has suspended production or is about to suspend production of two of its models, the S and the X, for approximately 3 weeks over the holiday period, not just because it's the holiday period. The article was unclear about the exact reason for them suspending it. The Y and the Model 3 will continue to be produced.
I think
whether the Model X is not selling as well because if those rear doors and or the Model S is not selling as well because it's bigger than most people want and more expensive.
Well, I think... Hold on. I think the Model S is due for a facelift, a mid-cycle, and it's way past a mid-cycle facelift in the case of the S, because the S has been out for 7 years. But I think, and I'm not 100% sure, but my hunch is that that's part of the reason, is that they're probably retooling and getting ready to come out with a slightly modified.
I'm not sure that is the reason, but whether it is or it isn't, this goes back to what I started out to say. It's getting harder to figure out how to redefine a particular line of car that, is, in my opinion, that is designed well in the first place, and how do you improve on something that almost comes out in the first generation of being a perfectly designed vehicle?
I don't know. iPhone
has long legs in
12.
Terms of design appeal. And I think the Teslas have long legs in the design appeal of their body bodies on the vehicles. What do you do? Do you go up and make them taller? Much sleeker.
Well, I think in the case of the Model S, there in the mid-cycle facelift, they're probably going to end up looking a little more like a 3 and a Y. So the original Tesla is very rounded, and it's going to go maybe a little more squarish, would be my guess. But it's still basically a design changes primarily. There won't be any, there won't be any changes in the chassis itself. But I also think Tesla makes a lot of changes, constantly, whether it's software, whether it's hardware. They put different batteries, they put different motors. So a lot of the changes they've made over time, over the years, are.
Well, they're internal and under the
skin. Hood.
And that's what's going across in lots of vehicle lines. One of my, obviously, knowledge bases is with the Jeep Cherokee, for example. And it is now in its, I have a 2015. It's now going into the 2021. The design, which I thought was excellent in the beginning, has stayed the same exterior-wise. I'm not getting into the tweaks that are going on underneath. I'll get to that in a minute. But it's long in the tooth as far as the look goes, because it hasn't really changed a whole lot. They've made some minor front-end changes with the lighting designs of the headlights and the other lights and the rear taillight designs, and the lighting designs when you put the brakes on now are different between the 15s and the patterns, that is, and the 19s going forward. They can do that kind of thing. But, you know, when you get a body style that is practical as well as visibly desirable, it's not really good to mess with something that is a success. But then people like to get tired of the looks of a particular vehicle because it has not changed. So they
hold on a second. I mean, vehicles evolve. I mean, engineering, I mean, the product gets better at every cycle. I mean,
that's right. Well, the engineering and what's underneath gets better every cycle.
I'm talking about the physical design, Jay.
I'm not talking about the engineering part, because now that everybody's going to go to updates from the satellites, so that you don't have to go to dealers to get product updates and stuff, because that's what's happening in that particular zone. So the engineering gets better, no question about it. And when the engineering gets better, and they don't mess with that part of it, the reliability gets better, and the satisfaction index goes up on these vehicles, because there are fewer and fewer problems in the consumer's eyes when things don't break or operational changes aren't made. So it confuses the consumer when they buy a new vehicle. They don't know how to work the Bluetooth, or they don't know how to work the technology in the vehicle. I was talking basically about the physical designs of vehicles and trying to make them differentiate themselves so that you knew you were seeing a 2021 version of a car you've been driving for 4 years, as opposed to seeing the same thing you've been driving for 4 years coming down the road at you, and that you can't tell which year model year it is, because there are fewer design changes to do that. It's very hard. It's easy to see the new Tahoe versus the old Tahoe, I think you'll agree, for those of us who watch designs coming at us on the road and think we can tell just what year it is. But I think it's blurring a little bit because you're running out of creative ways to make the same car look really radically different visually, enough to make somebody want to get rid of the vehicle that they've been driving in, that they may be perfectly happy to keep going for the next 10 years, which is not what the automakers want you to do with your vehicle. They do want you to keep coming back and buying new more often than less often.
Yes, but they're also improving the product. I mean, the life span of a particular model varies typically between 5 and 10 years. Subaru is actually on the shorter side. If you look at every 5 years, each one of the Subarus will be completely overhauled. New chassis, new dimensions, new. Powertrains remain very similar, so they change the chassis a lot, and the powertrains remain the same from one model to another, and those may change from even during the cycle of a particular car. Like the new 2021 Outback, or 2020, the Outback came out in 2020, and it looks very much like a 2019, just minor changes, but it's absolutely 100% different, and it'll go through 5 years. Audi, the German manufacturers usually go about 10 years with a particular model, and usually with one facelift in the middle of that.
Okay. Well, Jay, what do you want to wind up with?
In the last 20 seconds.
Safety features on the car. Just drove a car with a lot of the new safety features. Pretty cool. Heads-up display, lane-keeping, alerts, and I have a little story on that. 360-degree cameras from the top. You can see, you know, when you're parking in tight spaces, you can see the entire car. One little cool little gadget that I really appreciate on the later cars is the auto dimming of the lights, and that feature seems to work well on the few cars I've driven.
All right, that was 20 seconds. Thank you. He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarco. This is Car Keys.